Most girls would be thrilled to find out they're destined to turn into a mermaid at the age of 12. But then again, most girls are not Siren Phillips. Most girls are also not named Siren. Let's get to know her on this episode of the Mermaid Movie Club. I'm Mermaids Andrea. Let's dive into Scales. Mermaids are real. Greetings and shellutations. Welcome back, merpeeps, to the Mermaid Movie Club, our third film selection. We made it to three. Pretty spectacular. How are y'all doing? No, seriously, tell me. I'm concerned. It's a crazy time right now, and that's putting it lightly. I hope we're all checking in on each other and helping each other out as much as we can during this tough time. On my end, my human job has been closed for about a month now. They're not paying me. So I think they stopped paying me like at the end of March or something. Up until then, they were. But now they're not paying me. So right now, the only solace I can really afford to offer is talking about wacky mermaid movies on a podcast with you. Yes, you. You know, I figure we're all cramped up at home, some of us with all of the Netflixes and the Hulus and the Disney Pluses and the Amazon Prime videos at our disposal, or at least one of the above. So it's nice to at least connect in this way. You know, if you want to chat about anything, you just need someone to talk to. Maybe you're cramped at home with people you'd rather not talk to. I know that feeling. Get a hold of me. Talk to me. You can message me, tweet me at mermaidsandrea. You can also message me on Instagram, also mermaidsandrea, all one word, mermaidxandria, if you'd like to talk. Because I care about you, and I want to be there for you in some way. You know, there's not a lot I can do, but if I can just be a friend during this time, I would like to do that for you. Anyway, on happier things. As I mentioned in the last episode, which was our mermaid mini episode for International Mermaid Day. By the way, how do you like the mermaid minis? Had you liked those? I feel like that one went over, like it went longer than I thought it was going to. But I like the concept of them, so they're going to keep happening. But I might have to give them a different name if they're going to go that long. Anyway, I did find out recently, recent development, that we're on Apple Podcasts. I just wanted to bring it up again since this is a fairly new development and I wanted to mention it in a proper movie club discussion. The Mermaid Movie Club is on Apple Podcasts. And you might even be listening to this show on Apple Podcasts for all I know. So if that's the case, then this is probably completely redundant. But if you are not listening on Apple Podcasts, you're listening on Anchor, Spotify, what have you, there it is. You know, I was making such a big stink about it on Twitter. And now it's there. And it's probably been there for a while, but I don't have an Apple device with which to check the Apple Podcasts app. So I had to borrow a family member's iPhone to check for it, as I'm the only one in the house with an Android, so go figure. But it's there. It's linked now on the Anchor page, anchor.fm/mermaidmovieclub, or you can search Mermaid Movie Club on Apple Podcasts to find it. I think you could also search Mermaids Andrea. That might work as well. While you're there, be sure to please, because I said please, please rate and review the show. From what I understand, it helps people find the show more easily. So that is a huge help to me because I want to reach all of you and I want all the friends. I'm not saying that I'm ungrateful for the friends that I have here right now listening to the show, but I want more because mermaids always want more. We love friends and we love treasures. Our friends are our treasures. At least mine are. You are my treasures. So be kind, rate, and review. I wanted to say Be Kind Rewind because that's topical to a movie podcast and also because maybe Blockbuster, but it didn't make sense and now it's just awkward. Also, one other little programming note before we really get into this. I just want to go ahead and clarify it at the top. Going forward, I will be removing the starfish rating scale at the end of the show. I just didn't feel like it really accomplished anything. You know, I want to remain critical of these movies without being overtly negative, and I feel like having that in place kind of opens the door for a lot of negativity. You know, I'll go through my likes and my dislikes, just like I did with Aquamarine. I know I didn't do that for the 13th year. I should have, but I'm going to try to do it going forward with all the films that we're talking about. But I will not be rating it anymore on a scale of 1 to 5 starfish. I just don't think it's important. Especially when, let's be real, I'm not a film critic. I'm just a mermaid with a microphone, and I like to watch movies. I spend a lot of time trying to find things that I like about a movie and things I dislike, just in an effort to be fair. So, no more rating. That's it. It's done. I'm sorry if you miss it. You can rate them yourself if you want. That's you. That's all you. You do you, and I'm gonna do me. All right? So let's go ahead and get into the movie. First, a little bit of pregame. This one had to be decided by what I began referring to as the clamshell of decision. It's literally just a blue plastic clamshell that I put several movie titles in, shook up the shell, and drew one at random. What I ended up drawing was a 2017 movie called Scales, Mermaids Are Real. I mentioned it in the Mermaid Mini that this was going to be the next movie, so here we are. I committed to it and even had it ready and announced before I started writing, because I'm a professional. No, I'm not. Not even a little bit. I watched it on Netflix, as I think it was just added recently, but it's available on a bunch of other services too. I think it either is or was on Stars for a while, and you can, I don't know if this has been taken away since, but I think you might still be able to watch it on Amazon Prime Video with the Stars add-on. But we don't have Stars. So it eluded me because we don't have Stars, and I'm not about to subscribe to Stars for the sake of one movie. Although I should have done it because I also wanted to watch Venom, which was also on Stars, but I just ended up buying Venom, and I love it. So I wasn't about to subscribe to it for the sake of that, but then it hit Netflix, and that seemed to be the answer to my problems. So thanks a bunch, Netflix. By the way, anyone notice that they took off all but the first season of H2O? What gives? Thanks a bunch, Netflix. But anyway, back to the movie. Like I said, this movie came out in 2017, July 21st to be exact. It looks like it had a brief theatrical run at AMC Theaters, similar to that of Conglomerate Media's The Little Mermaid, probably a year later, which also went to Netflix within months, hence why it's referred to as the Netflix Little Mermaid. IMDb also refers to it as Scales, A Mermaid's Tale, which doesn't appear to be the title. Is that more of a title or a tagline? I don't know. It looks like it's part of the title, based on the Netflix title. So that could be an international title, maybe, but it would be easy to get that confused with the other 2017 movie, A Mermaid's Tale, that came out, in 2017, just 2 months prior. The one that's got Jerry O'Connell, I think it's still on Hulu, with such a creative title. Yeah. But the film has a website, scales.film, which tells you all you need to know about this film, and at the same time, not a whole lot. This film is written, directed, and produced by Kevin Peterson. The cast of this film consists of Emmy Perry as the main merm of this film, Siren Phillips, that's a pretty subtle name there. Totally subtle. Elizabeth Rum as Tiffany. I hope I'm getting that right because there's an umlaut over it. Morgan Fairchild as Principal Strauss. Jack Dylan Grazer as Adam Wiltz. You might recognize him from the most recent It movies. I recognize him as Freddie Freeman from Shazam. And Nikki Hahn as Crystal, and a certain mer we all know and love, Hannah Fraser, as Emerald. This is, of course, not Hannah's only film credit to her name, as she also appeared in A Mermaid's Tale, the movie I just mentioned with Jerry O'Connell. It's on Hulu. And I'm also learning from looking at her IMDb page that she was in a Sigur Rós video in 2012. Not as a mermaid, but as an underwater model, I believe, but that's still pretty cool. I'm a huge music nerd, so I think that's really, really neat. Anyway, let's go ahead, dive in for real this time. And this is where I'd put a splash sound effect if I had one. If you know where I can get a hold of cool sound effects, please let me know. I'm really dying to spice up this show with some sound effects or something, because Anchor does not have splashes in their sound effects, and it's really, really disheartening. All right. Beginning with the first thing that I remarked on, which was one of the studio cards, and, you know, I could feel really bad about this, because the studio card, I laughed at it because the studio card is for Fromage Pictures. Fromage Pictures. And I laughed. That was the first thing I caught, and I laughed at it so hard. You'll find out pretty quickly that this is oddly fitting, because you can smell the cheese pretty quickly. So we open up on this really, really pretty ocean shot, like a drone shot, and there's this monologue from Siren about dreaming about the water. She's dreaming about the water, living it, breathing it, all that sort of thing. Now, I understand that dreams aren't necessarily a premonition of the future, but this is a mermaid movie we're talking about, so someone's got to have some wildly immersive ocean dreams. We don't really stick around here for very long, but long enough for Siren to take a long sip of water. And this is where Cody Griffin entered the chat. So we got Siren, and we got this kid Adam. This is the one that was in It and Shazam. And just like his character in Shazam, he's got a crutch. You know, I had this on with my sister, And she was actually asking if it was some kind of condition that Jack had. And I don't think so. I've only seen him in two movies, and that was Shazam and this one. So I think it's just a coincidence, really. So I don't think that's just a thing with him. I think it's just a coincidence. In this case, his character Adam has brittle bone disease, or as I learned from this movie, the scientific name, osteogenesis imperfecta. Now you know. He's getting bullied by some kids, and so Siren steps in. This, I think, is actually really cool because I would have been too afraid to do this, so this is actually really, really cool of Siren to do. When I was her age, I was very self-conscious. It was middle school. We're all self-conscious, you know. By the way, I hate that as Adam was talking about his brittle bone disease, I had that glass bones and paper skin monologue in the back of my head from SpongeBob, so let me just apologize for that. And let me apologize also for laughing at it. It's of course not like a serious, I mean it is a serious thing. I worded that wrong. But yeah, I just hate that my mind went straight to that. Because, I mean, he does really seem like he was born with glass bones, but everything else seems okay with him. Good head on his shoulders. He's a good kid. We're going to find out much later that he's a really, really good kid. So Siren and Adam head to class where he introduces himself to the class. Then you've got Siren's friend Crystal, and she's kind of like, if this is iCarly and Siren is Carly Shay, then Crystal is Sam Puckett. Siren is the Miranda Cosgrove, and Crystal is the Jeanette McCurdy. Because she's kind of sarcastic. And she seems like she's mean, but she's really not. So Crystal seems to know something about this kid, and she advises Siren to keep her distance. But she's like, don't become friends with him. It's social suicide. But Siren reveals she's got a thing for him already, because that was quick. I don't know. It's like you talk to one guy when you're in middle school and you're like, does he like me? Because I kind of like him. No. I'm just. Anyway, the best part of the scene, honestly, is where the teacher asks the class to name an organism that undergoes metamorphosis. And Crystal answers with little hesitation, no irony. Mermaids?
And this is where I was. Oh, Crystal.
I'm looking at her like, Crystal? Girl, that was not the first answer I would have had in mind. That is how you get made fun of. Just trust me on this. I can speak from experience. Because in middle school, everyone was like so grown up, and they were trying really hard to act grown up and be like all cool. And I was still drawing mermaids and Inuyasha fan art. And it wasn't even really good. I didn't stick with it, obviously. Anything so that I didn't have to pay attention to the quadratic formula. I was supposed to, but I didn't. So the teacher tells Crystal that mermaids aren't real. Surprise. And suggests butterflies, because butterflies were the more obvious answer. Crystal, remember the immortal words of Cody Griffin. We're coming back to him again. He says, we're in middle school. You unironically talk about mermaids in biology? People talk. That wasn't what he actually said, but now that I think about it, that was kind of what happened in that one scene where Jess is telling him, oh, you might be. Except nobody else was in the room. Still happened. I digress. Moving on. So while this is happening, they're in class. Siren's getting distracted. Big mood. And she's staring really intently at this water bottle. And she's making the water like spin around. Like one of those, you know, those science experiments where you have like the water bottles on top of each other. You spin it around and it makes like a cyclone. Cyclone experiment. That was what I was thinking of. I was thinking of the name for it. And she's doing this water spinning thing. Okay. If you're into H2O, please correct me on this, but Chloe's, sorry, not Chloe, Cleo. 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 Cleo is the one with the water moving power, right? Because I know Ricky did the heating stuff. Emma, I don't remember. I didn't get far enough before Netflix took it off to meet Bella. So thanks a lot, Netflix. But if I remember correctly, Cleo was the one who could move water. Correct me on that if I'm wrong. So I think she was able to spin it. and get with me on that too. So Siren is staring intently at this water bottle and notices she's making the water move. She freaks out. She asks to go to the bathroom, and that seems to surprise everyone for some reason, because her classmates are all just gasping as if somebody just cut the lights in the classroom. Again, I'm speaking from experience there, because I remember we had that happen a few times when I was in high school. That's what I'm not getting. Like, Siren just has to go to the bathroom. What is so explosive? You know what? Never mind. I'm not going to go any further with that. That's... Why did I write that? Don't answer that question. Please don't. Let's just go ahead and move on. So, she runs home. She's going to use the bathroom at home. I told the teacher I'd use the bathroom. Didn't tell her which one. I'm going to go to the one at home. She brought that Vine back. Remember Vine? Simpler times, simpler vines. I also found it really ironic that Siren told her mom upon returning home that school was canceled, because at the time I'm writing this, at the time I watched the movie even, school, while it's not quite canceled because we're still doing the remote learning and my mom is teaching from home, the schools are effectively closed. They are literally on lockdown. Like, my mom can't enter her classroom or anything because of the corona. And at this point, I don't know when they're going to reopen. So it's like art imitating life, like 3 years prior. Anyway, Siren and her mom, Tiffany, are talking at some point, and they're looking at this photo of what we find out is Tiffany with Siren's birth mother, who is dead. It's like she's a Disney princess or something. It's one of those things where we never find out how she died, which makes things even more suspicious. You know, gonna go off on another tangent here. I was watching Onward with my sister a couple weeks ago after it hit Disney Plus, and we all know based on the trailers that the dad is dead. I won't get too into that because, number one, it's quite fresh, so spoilers. And number two, this episode is not about Onward, nor do I plan on doing an episode on Onward, but they do make pretty strong implications in the movie about how Wilden Lightfoot passed away. This movie does not do that. I think the implication is that Siren's birth mother died shortly after giving birth, so I'm guessing maybe complications from childbirth. I don't know why I'm speculating so heavily on the cause of her death. Maybe it's a Scorpio thing. I don't know. Either way, what makes this even more suspicious is that it appears to be a picture of Elizabeth Rome, the actress playing Tiffany, and Hannah Fraser. And we all know if Hannah Fraser is in a mermaid movie, it's not just to appear in a photograph with Elizabeth Rome. Mermaid nerds might get it. Others might not. And that's okay. But you can't pull a fast one on me, Kevin Peterson. I just know. I'm too smart. I know too many things. So we're going to fast forward a little bit. Crystal's back at the house, and she's brought her mother, Quinn. This is where Quinn drops the clamshell on Siren that she is a mermaid. Quinn's a mermaid. Crystal's a mermaid. And so is Siren. And Siren does not believe a word of this, because why would she? That story is ridiculous. Quinn explains this, and we'll see later, that a lot of the women in the town are mermaids. But there's no mention of any mermen, so that makes things questionable. I kind of want to know more about that. It's never explained. To be fair, mermen do often get forgotten in mercentric media, hence why there are like two merman movies that I have on my list of films to cover, and I've already covered one of them, and that was the 13th year. So I think the other one is Sabrina Down Under, and I'll do that at some point. Anyway, moving on. Siren later explains to Quinn that she can do that water spinny thing, and then Quinn is just like, oh, okay. Well, that might make you more desirable to hunters because you have a healing ability. She might have a healing ability, I meant. And so Siren's reaction to this is like, hunters? In the most Disney Channel way possible. She's like, this is big reaction, and it just comes across as like a Hannah Montana type of reaction. This is also with the hunters. It's a popular mermaid trope right there, and it's like one of my least favorite ones. Behind every mermaid, there is either a human male waiting to sweep her off of her fins, or a mad scientist kidnapping her for the sake of experimentation. In this case, it's kind of both. I guess you could say that Adam is the former. He's like the human male love interest, but the latter is definitely present. Splash had an example of this after Madison got splashed down by Eugene Levy, hounded by reporters, and later taken away by scientists to be studied. This was also kind of in the 13th year, in the form of Big John Wheatley, but he was just a weird fisherman with a fixation, not so much a scientist. Or was he? Dunno. You never can tell with Big John. Now, one point that Quinn makes here is that Siren's blood may have healing powers. There is some mythology to this, or at least mythology that this might be loosely based on. For this mythology note, we have to go all the way to Japan to learn about the Ningyo. The physical description of the Ningyo is said to be a fish with a human face, and I've even seen some descriptions describe it as almost being monkey-like. But the flesh of the Ningyo is said to grant immortality or longer life when eaten. The Ningyo is also sort of a black cat, a bad omen, as wherever they washed up, chaos would often follow. Storms, war, what have you. The most famous tale of the Ningyo would be that of Yao Bikuni, where a fisherman catches a strange fish creature, grills its meat, and offers it to his friends. They find out that the fish had a human face, which, you know, that'd freak anyone out. So they discreetly hide the fish away until they're able to get rid of it. However, one of these friends inadvertently gives the fish to his daughter, since, you know, this girl wanted a present. And she gets what she wants. She wants it now. What was that girl's name from Willy Wonka? Veruca Salt? I think that was her. So he's afraid that he's going to poison his daughter with the human face fish meat. But what happens instead is she actually retains eternal youth and lives to be 800 years old, but at the expense of losing her husband to old age. I'll link an article in the show notes about Yao Bikuni. And also, I would also check out Rumiko Takahashi's Mermaid Saga. That is a manga series that ran in Japanese manga magazines from 1984 to 1994. Very, very heavily based on the Ningyo myth with a horror lean, in addition to Mermaid Scar and the Mermaid Forest OVAs that were adapted from it, and the Mermaid Forest anime that ran in 2003. You might want to scour YouTube for those. Trust me, I looked through Crunchyroll. Not there. This is a tough one. Anyway, it's not exactly the same thing, since in the Ningyo myth, you have mermaid flesh that grants immortality, and in this movie, you have mermaid blood with healing properties. I'd even say the unicorn blood from Harry Potter is similar, as it keeps the user alive, but in return, the user is effectively cursed. Kind of like the Ningyo, where it's like, yay, immortality, but also, oh, snap, that's a bad omen. This Harry Potter anecdote was brought to you by my lack of focus. Now back to our show. Cut to Siren in the bathroom. She's ditched this little dinner. She's not happy. So what does she do? Takes a bath. Girl, you can't deny your truth. While she's in the bath, she starts developing these gross fin feet. I'd say they remind me of frog feet, but they're like bony and they've got talons and stuff, so maybe more like lizard feet. It's just gross looking. It's not like the 13th year where Cody's fin feet were just like gigantic scuba fins that were like prosthetics attached to his feet. No, this is, they're disgusting. These things are disgusting. They're all like fleshy and slimy and That said, the effect is actually really, really cool. So she tries to get out of the bath in shock and subsequently passes out. The next time we see Siren, we are in the ER with her and Crystal and Quinn. Now, Quinn, she's not good at delivering news. She's just not. She's not tactful. Is that the word I want to use? I feel like I'm always using that word incorrectly. So I don't know if that's the word I want. But either way, she's not good at delivering any kind of news to Siren. In fact, she drops another clamshell on Siren and lets her know that not only is her birth mother alive, get this, she's been alive the whole time, but she is the quote-unquote leader of the merfolk. The wordage here is interesting because on one hand it implies Siren is some kind of princess, has some kind of status, and that her mother is some kind of queen. But at the same time, the word leader is incredibly vague. So it could be an interesting twist on another trope. She might be a queen. She might be a mermaid president. Maybe even a mermaid prime minister. A mermaid manager? She's a mermaid manager, and the hunters are like a bunch of Karens who want to speak to her. And now it makes sense. Okay, so Emerald's the manager. So Crystal and Quinn dip out, and the nurse comes back to check on Siren. She's got a glass of water for her. And then she comes back to give Siren the water, and Siren's gone. She got out of there. So I guess they're going to bill her? I'm going to bill Tiffany? Yeah. All right, that's because that's just what you do. You just run out of the hospital. By the way, I wrote in my show notes for that scene, Siren got the shell out of Dodge, and I just wanted to make sure that pun made it into this episode, so here it is. Siren got the shell out of Dodge. Thank you, thank you. That was extremely original. That was copyright Mermaidsandria 2020. I'll be here all day, folks. So, where does Siren escape to? Home, you'd think. Nope. She heads to Adam's house. Because I guess all of a sudden she knows where he lives. But one running theme I've seen in this movie is that everybody knows where Siren lives. I'm backtracking a little bit. And I guess I understand Crystal knowing, because she says at one point that sometimes she lives with Siren while her mother, quote unquote, works. And by that, I mean she returns to the sea to do mermaid stuff for 3 years. But shortly after that scene, Adam turns up at her place. So how does he know where she lives? How does everyone know where Siren lives? And how does Siren know where Adam lives? For all I know, Tiffany's got like one of those Hobby Lobby door hangers that says, a mermaid lives here. Because honestly, she seems like the type. Anyway, Siren ends up at Adam's place, but instead runs into his father, Gary. Because of course he's a Gary. He looks like a Gary. Right off the bat, this guy gives off creep vibes. This movie is not very good at keeping things in the dark. You get a very good idea that Gary and his friend Brody over here are hunters. You can pull the wool over our eyes. It's fine. You can keep us guessing. Like when I saw Frozen with my sister back in 2014 and audibly gasped when it was revealed that Hans was the villain, even though I guess I was supposed to have known that from the outset, because I guess it was obvious. Sorry for not picking it up the first time. Basically what I'm saying is make it less obvious. I guess the most infuriating thing about all of this is that we are thinking the same thing. These guys are bad. Who's not thinking that? Siren. And this is all especially troubling because in the next scene, when they're going on a walk by the lake, Siren reveals to Adam that she's a mermaid. Look, Siren, I know you really like this kid and you want to trust him with your deepest, darkest secret, and you want to probably explain to him why you may have to disappear for a while, and you want to be honest. I understand that. That's really, really smart. But that's also really, really not smart at all. You're not reading the signs. These are... Like, literally, when she was in the house, there was all this, like, there was, like, fishing nets. There was, like, an image of a whaling stick. I'm going to explain that in a minute. All these things that point to, we hunt mermaids. And she just was not picking up on it for some reason. Like, girl, just... These literally are the men that your mom and Crystal's mom warned you about. Like, this is really, seriously, one of those scream at the TV movies. Like, I was screaming at the TV during this movie. I was just like, Siren, look at your life. Look at your choices. Anyway, I know she's like 12 and I understand, but. Okay, I'm fine. I'm really fine. So then, after all this transpires, Adam takes Siren to some storage container that his dad owns, and I'm going to go back to the 13th year again. You can tell that these films have a lot in common. This is like when Cody and Jess go into Big John's weird mermaid room and find all his weird mermaid stuff. One of these things is called the whaling stick. I have to point this out because it's going to be important later. Gary described it earlier as a sort of like harpoon, where there's like a spear at the end, one end, and the other has like a blue crystal ball that seems to call creatures to it, kind of like a lure. It looks like if you took Maleficent's staff and put like a harpoon on the end. But as they're looking through this mermaid stuff, there's this book that Siren flips through that has a picture of the whaling stick in it. And lo and behold, Adam's dad just so happens to have a replica of the whaling stick in a storage unit because of course he does. Because that's not weird. Now, Adam tells a slightly different story of the whaling stick, where the crystal ball end of it is actually a distress signal that signals other mermaids for help. So, that makes Gary's side of the story very, very, very interesting. And also fairly conflicted with Adam's side of the story. Cause for concern. As if everything about Gary isn't a red flag. So Siren returns home, where Tiffany has been waiting for her. Remember, we haven't seen Tiffany since Siren passed out and subsequently escaped the hospital. So Tiffany is mad. Tiffany gives her an aerator. It's this weird device. It looks like a pair of Sony headphones, circa like 2002. They go like, the ones that go like behind the neck, and they have that weird like blobby shape. Love those. And that, I guess, is supposed to help her as her gills come in. Siren is less than thrilled, but who wouldn't be? Siren then tells Tiffany about what Adam showed her, and now Tiffany's on the defensive. Again, stuff that everyone else is aware of, except for Siren. Right off the name alone, she says, Adam Wills, and Tiffany's like, she knows something. First of all, I need to know how that is. There's this really common theme of Tiffany knowing a lot of Mer stuff despite not being one herself, and maybe that comes from her closeness with Quinn and Crystal, which checks out because Crystal seems to know enough about them. But still, I have questions. I have a lot of questions. Like, does she talk with Quinn and Crystal about this? Was this stuff that she discussed with Emerald? What's going on? I have questions, and they don't get answered. By the way, spoiler alert: they don't get answered at all. So, the guild development actually happens pretty quickly. Like, I think it's literally the next day. And they kind of look like cat scratches on her neck. For some reason, Siren's way of remedying this is to wrap a scarf around her neck to cover them. And that's fine, you know. I would probably do the same thing. But you know what else I would have also done? I would have brought my aerator with me. Literally the thing that your mother was telling you about literally the night before. You had one job. You know, sometimes I forget to go out. When I go out, I forget to bring my sunglasses with me. And I wonder why I have to squint while I'm driving. Because it's so dang bright out. I live in Florida. It's bright. So it's kind of like that. Only there's a suffocation risk here. You know, I can live without the sunglasses. It's just really uncomfortable. But she needs that thing to breathe. So she makes a deal with Adam to heal him on her terms or something, because it's either that or Adam's father gets her first. And now she gets it, because now Adam's letting her know straight up that his father is out to kill her. So they make their deal. Siren is feeling a bit woozy. She walks out of the room, talks to Crystal for like a second right before passing out cold on the floor. And so now we have to call upon Principal Morgan Fairchild. I mean, Principal Strauss. I just really wanted to call her Principal Morgan Fairchild. She is our guiding light. She is the saving grace of the film. I love her. Now, based on the very obvious context this film gives us, because this film thinks I'm stupid, we know she's a mermaid too. She asks what the problem is. Crystal says, metamorphosis? Again, no irony here. Like, she doesn't hold back. And Strauss does not bat an eye at this. She's just like, okay, let's go to my office. I got this. Right. Okay. Because that's just... Sure. So, we go to this place called the River Room. It's not really a room. It's outdoors, and I feel like it's not that much of a room. But it's this crazy, magical mermaid gathering going on here. And it feels a bit like an initiation, where Siren is presented to the rest of the town mermaids for the first time. And there's some familiar faces here, like Principal Strauss and Quinn and Crystal and the airheaded biology teacher from earlier. Her name's Miss Harper. I forgot to mention that. She's interesting. And they all start singing to her, which they call it wailing for some reason. That's incredibly pretentious. Shut up. They're singing. Wailing. I really hope somebody got that reference. Now, don't get me wrong. It sounds really, really, really pretty. It really does. And I think this is the first movie I have covered on this show that covered the aspect of mermaid singing. I don't remember it in Aquamarine. I think it was mentioned briefly. And it certainly was not in the 13th year. It took me this long to get to this point. So it's this big kumbaya moment they're having here. And then Tiffany at some point turns to Siren and says, I know it doesn't feel like it right now, but you're living every little girl's dream. I mean, sure. Yeah. Yeah. Every girl dreams of being hunted for their blood when they're 12. Don't you? Didn't you? I sure did. I know what she meant. I know. But this movie changes tones like the voice changes coaches. Come on. Commit to something. Also, I'd be remiss if I neglected to mention that there were plenty of grown women who literally make a living as mermaids, and one of them is in this movie. Imagine that. I wouldn't say that I'm really making a living as a mermaid, but I'm trying, okay? I'm trying my best. I can only try my best. And so, here it is. The moment where it all went to shell. I need to come up with a pun that doesn't involve the word shell. I think it's getting a bit stale, I think. Need new ideas. Anyway, we're back at the hunter's place where the hunters let spill that they know of a mermaid on the brink of transformation. Hold up. I'm going to stop you there. What and how? This in context, given like the metaphor of like the mermaid shift, that's here, that really creeps me out. Okay? It's creepy. It's creepy in so many ways. I hate the whole Hunter storyline is the worst. It is the worst thing about this movie. I hate it so much. And I wish it wasn't there. So, Adam only makes this worse. I feel like he doesn't mean to, but it just kind of really goes downhill from here. Adam lets it out that he knows who this mermaid is, but he won't tell his father unless his father can guarantee her safety. But his dad's like, it's your friend, isn't it? And he's like, no. And he's like, yeah, it's your friend. He figures that out pretty quickly, that it's Siren. And so it can only get worse from here. Like I said, these hunters are like mega ultra super creeps. Gary, I'm sure Gary had a feeling the whole time and he was just waiting for the right moment to ask Adam. And I hate it. I hate it so much. He says, send a team to her house. And immediately I get grossed out. Like that is some, like what kind of FBI stuff is going on here? They have like, how do they have like a GPS? First of all, he doesn't know her name. He did. Remember that they asked that at the beginning, not the beginning, but somewhere toward the beginning of the movie. I don't remember if she said Siren Phillips though. But then again, she's got to be the only girl in town named Siren. Who else is named Siren? Like I said at the top of the show, that's not a common name, and it should also be a red flag, possibly, maybe not. So. This movie, oh, again, I hate this Hunter storyline. I'm just going to keep putting that out there. Anyway, they send a team. They knock out the security guard mermaids with their whaling sticks. They knock them out with tranquilizer darts because holy carp, what is going on here? This was a total and complete mood whiplash. Like, I don't even know what we're doing anymore. What is this movie? I'm concerned. So now we've immediately flipped into this big rescue scene. Adam sneaks Siren out of the house because he's a good bro, and the hunters get a hold of Tiffany. I assume that maybe they assume that Tiffany is one too. And, you know, for a good portion of this movie, I've been like, yeah, maybe she is. And so they take her away. This movie only continues to get wilder, but not at any point does this start making sense. Now, let me just take a second to talk about Adam Wiltz. He really tries his best, and I have to give him that. He's got a condition where his bones could shatter with any kind of significant force applied to them. So he's kind of taking a huge risk here just to protect Siren. I can't really be mad at that. Adam Wiltz is a good bro. His father and the other hunters he has to deal with suck. So he's just getting a really bad deal this whole film. So you have to feel bad for him. But again, good bro. Again, kind of like Jess, where he's got like this bad deal, but he makes the best of it. So you gotta love it. You love to see it. Now, back to Siren. She's made it to the safe house because I guess she knows where the safe house is. Sure. I don't remember if it was ever established that she knew where it was or that she was ever told where it was. She just knows where it is. Siren lets Crystal and Ms. Harper know that they've got Tiffany. Crystal's reaction to this is so unimpressed. Like, girl, your best friend's mother was kidnapped. And all you have is just this completely nonchalant, I'm sorry. While this is all happening, the other mermaids, led by Strauss, try to negotiate with the hunters for Tiffany's freedom. Strauss offers herself in exchange for Tiffany because she's the champ. But Brody, the ultra, ultra mega creep in this equation, says something like, I don't know. She's pretty. Kind of like having her around. Strauss, with little hesitation, says, yeah, that'll be enough of that. Listen, she does not mess around. She is the boss. I love her. So much. She is, again, the saving grace of this movie. She's the super cool, epic mermaid aunt that I wish I had. Honestly, she is just cool. I love her. So they agree to the trade and let Tiffany go, and Strauss goes in her place. But Brody follows Tiffany. Because of course he does. Because he's the ultra, ultra mega creep. Really, really funny thing that I want to point out that happens as Brody is chasing Tiffany back home. She runs past this jogger, and the jogger asks her, hey, Tiffany, everything okay? And Tiffany responds, not really, with no hesitation. And that's a big mood. That I would have probably said the same thing. Usually, like, I feel like I shouldn't do this, but whenever, like, my coworkers ask me how I'm doing, I'm like, my best. So Adam runs after her too. He tries to follow Tiffany into the home, saying he wants to help, but she ends up slamming the door on his arm, not knowing he's there, and that shatters his wrist. And don't worry, this is shown in graphic detail. Like, we get an x-ray of a shattering bone, like Tiffany just delivered a Mortal Kombat fatality on him. Still waiting on this kid to get a break. Man, I feel bad. Again, you just feel bad for him the whole time. Brody chases him off while Tiffany sits and mopes in Siren's bedroom. Remember, during the time Tiffany was in Hunter custody, Siren had successfully escaped and made it to the safe house where she is to begin her transformation. So at this point, Tiffany thinks she might not ever see Siren again. But isn't it like a 3-year period for half-breeds? So it's not forever. But I guess 3 years is a long time for a mother to be away from her young daughter. I don't know. I'm not a parent. So I guess I can't look at it from a parent's perspective. But I don't know. So back at the safe house, the day is here. Siren's going to become a mermaid at long last. Crystal and Ms. Harper are in the pool with her, kind of helping her with the transition, like getting her bearings in the water and whatnot. Now, of course, as this is happening, her tail is finally forming. The process of this is really gross looking. Like, you can see where her legs are physically fusing together, and it's just really gross looking. Like, you can see, like, the skin fusing. Again, more gross effects that are ultimately cool, but still gross. We get the fin feet back, the ones that we saw earlier that made her pass out. Only now she seems less spooked by them. There's more confidence here. But here's my beef. When she does finally get her tail, somehow the fin feet make less sense. Her fin feet don't actually look like the fins she actually has. Like, not even remotely. She had, like, those weird talons on her feet, and then it's just like, now what? And this tail is really, really gorgeous. Don't get me wrong. I had to do some digging on their Instagram. They are, I think, scales.movie on Instagram. And they did confirm that the tail is by Mer Taylor, which doesn't surprise me because that was my first suspicion. Great work, mate. Great work, Mer Taylor, as always. Love it. So, now Crystal and Ms. Harper have to get Siren out of this pool, off to the beach, and into the ocean. And this is going to be a lot easier said than done, we find out. By the way, speaking of tails, if Siren is Emerald's daughter, we did see Emerald swimming a couple minutes ago at this point. They have such different tails, but they are mother and daughter. Siren's got this pretty blue mer-tailer. Emerald has that signature Hannah Fraser sequin tail with the big fringes. And it's not really so much a gripe. It doesn't really bother me that much. But I'm like, I have to wonder why. I don't know. There's probably like a technical thing going on here, a logistical thing. But nobody thought about it. And it sounds like it's starting to rain. That's cool. Okay. Tiffany arrives at the safe house, but Brody and the hunters have found her. Again, this is like the creepiest dude possible. They find out fairly quickly that Siren has changed, and they're at the beach, and so they track them down there, and it all just gets so much worse, so much faster. Okay. They get there only to find that Siren is way gone. She's back in the sea. She's met up with Emerald, aka Mermama Hannah Fraser, so she's useless. But Brody accosts Crystal, claiming she looks like she'll be changing soon. Okay, what the shell? How do they even know? How? What even is this? Again, this is creepy. This whole... Everything about the hunters creeps me out. So he grabs her, and he says they'll just need to take twice as much blood. Again, and I cannot stress this enough. Why? Remember, this is mostly Brody at this point, being ultra, mega, super duper extra creep, and he seems to slowly be taking the reins from Gary. You know, I'm starting to think maybe Gary was never in control in the first place. So Adam steps in and pleads with the hunters to back off, claiming that they're inhumane for hunting mermaids. Seriously, Adam? Epic little dude. I have to give him props for this. The hunters finally back off at the behest of Adam as well as Tiffany. And then there's Brody. Being Brody, he only obeys Brody. And as the hunters are walking off, they're kind of defeated, like, okay, we're going to go. He turns right around, chucks a spear at the other mermaids, yelling, I want that girl! But Adam is the MVP. He literally jumps into the line of fire, sparing Crystal's life, but severely injuring himself in the process. Like, it doesn't sound like there's any coming back from this. He had to have shattered, like, every single bone in his body. For that poor kid. Then Tiffany, because she knows so much mer stuff without being one herself, makes good use of that whaling stick. She snatches it from the ground, because that was, I think, what Brody had used to attack Crystal. She makes good use of it, calls Siren and Emerald back to the shore for help. And so their idea of helping is singing to Adam. All the mermaids are like holding on to each other, and Adam, as his father is holding him, sobbing with regret. And this magically heals him. So here's where it gets interesting. It's not about the blood. It's the song. The wailing. Sorry. I still think that's pretentious. So not only are his injuries healed, but he's essentially healed of his condition. He's good. He's fine. Gary got what he wanted, so he backs off. But Brody. Maybe they did surprise us after all with Brody being the main bad guy. He doesn't back off. And I wish he would. I'm just tired of him at this point. He's drawn this out far too long. I'm ready for him to go. Emerald summons this huge wave like a tsunami. And she's just like, nah, you're not getting her. And Siren threatens him too. And he seems very unthreatened because Siren is tiny. But Siren reminds him that he's made of 65% water. Remember, at the top of the movie, we saw that she could control water. So what does she do? I don't actually know, because I'm looking at this, and at first I thought she like dehydrated him, but if that were the case, he would not have melted until nothing was left of him but his clothes. So it's a bit Wizard of Oz. But then again, what do I always say? You can't apply logic to mermaids, plain and simple. I think I'm going to say that with like every movie that I review from here on out. I feel like it's going to come up at every point possible. So plain and simple, you can't apply logic to mermaids. By the way, this is also the smartest thing that Siren has done in this entire movie. See, she does pay attention in biology sometimes. But this was actually like a really cool, really clever thing that she did. So I'm going to give her that, because that's science, man. Good job. So here's the plot twist. Siren was a pureblood the whole time. So she doesn't adhere to the 3-year rule of half-breeds, where it's like 3 years on land, 3 years in the sea, and she can come and go when she pleases. So it begs the question then, why couldn't Emerald come and get her? Siren actually asked that to Quinn in the ER. Remember, Emerald is the leader of the Mers, and so I guess that implies that she can't really leave. So that's the best explanation I have for that. Tiffany bids Siren goodbye for 2 months, and she goes back into the sea with Emerald, I guess for 2 months. Siren goes back to that water monologue that we heard at the top of the movie, and I guess that's happily ever after. Oh, thank Neptune. This movie's over. So, because I'm still experimenting with format, I'm playing with the whole good idea, bad idea format that I had from Aquamarine, and bringing that back. So here's my pros and cons. Pros and prawns. Still working on new puns. Number one, this movie is really, really good at developing its own mermaid lore and not a whole lot else, apart from the next two bullet points, obviously. Kind of trying to summarize here what a lot of those lore elements are. Number one, half-breed mermaids do 3 years on land, 3 years under the sea, while purebloods can come and go as they please. Number two, mermaids begin their transformation on their 12th birthday, very similar to the 13th year, where Cody's transition began on his 13th year. Number three, mermaids have healing blood, but again, that goes back into the Ningyo stuff I covered earlier, so that's probably not quite exclusive to this movie. Or rather, that was what we thought was going on, but it was actually more about the song. Maybe there is something to the blood, but we don't know. It's never explained. Number four, a mermaid's initial transformation usually takes around half an hour, but after that, it's supposed to come on quicker as the body becomes more accustomed to it. Number five, each mermaid has her own unique wail, kind of like dolphins or whales. Number six, mermaids sleep on seaweed beds. Then you add in the Big Mermaid Clan, the Whaling Stick, the Safe House, and there really is this kind of mermaid lore and culture based around it, and it just seems so fleshed out, and I love that. That said, I think there was more time spent on developing the lore than there was on most of the characters. But you know what? Fine. I would have wanted them to elaborate a bit more on the mermaid language, though. There are a few scenes where Emerald is speaking in some mermaid language. I think she speaks it to Gary at some point. It comes up in one of Siren's dreams. I would have wanted a little bit more explanation on that, but She seems to be the only one who uses it. I want to know why that is. And I also really would like to know what she's saying, because that would really, really help me. I remember when I was watching Game of Thrones, I only watched the first season of Game of Thrones and I didn't continue it. I think when I was watching it, no, it was Star Wars. It was Star Wars. And whenever somebody would be speaking in a foreign language, because I watched the original trilogy, not like on, I don't think it was very legal when I watched it, truth be told. So it was not subtitled. Whenever there was somebody speaking in a foreign language, it was not subtitled. When I watched Game of Thrones, it was definitely subtitled. And maybe some episodes weren't. So like, I think there were some episodes where the Dothraki wasn't subtitled. I don't know. I'm remembering things differently. Either way, subtitles would have been great. Or maybe that's up to interpretation. Anyway, number two, cinematography. Yes. So nice. There are a lot of really, really pretty artistic shots in this movie. Among them, there's the one in the beginning where Siren is giving her little dreaming of water monologue, which of course you were, honey. It's like a mermaid rite of passage. And it's that beautiful drone shot of the shore that Siren kind of fades into as if she's surfacing. And then she just wakes up in bed. It's a bit like mood whiplash, but I think that was the desired effect. Then about midway through, you have Siren kind of coming to terms with this mermaid thing. She's looking around her room at the objects in her room. And then the scene cuts to those objects floating aimlessly in the sea. And these shots are, on one hand, aesthetically pleasing. Like, take it, like, again, cinematography here is really, really pretty. But on the other, they're a bit head-scratchy. But when you consider what's going through Siren's head at the time, it just makes sense. These are things that are going to be lost to her new life. And that's the message I got out of it. It's a little pretentious, but I like it. Number three. Principal Strauss. That's it. Morgan Fairchild saves this movie. She reminds me a lot of Tess from Burlesque. That's the one played by Cher. Where she's this very glammy, sarcastic mother hen type. Of course, I feel like she's a bit less harsh than Tess. She knows her stuff. She's unfussed, unbothered. I feel like whatever leader role Emerald has under the sea, Principal Strauss has on land. That's got to be the case. You know what? I take back my analogy. Emerald is the queen. Strauss is the manager, only this time her army is made up of Karens. Speaking of Cher, no, I'm not doing an episode based on the 1990 movie Mermaids that she was in on the basis that there are no actual mermaids in it. I'm sorry. That title misled me. I do still love me some Cher, though. So those are my three pros. These are the cons that I found. These were my personal drawbacks. Pros and prawns. What rhymes with pros that I can use? So, number one. This is the first thing I didn't like. The idea in this film of Siren at the end discovering she's actually pure blood and being able to come and go as she pleases feels like a bit of a cop-out. It'd be like going back to Aquamarine if Haley's family called off their move. Haley and Claire adjusted to being apart from each other, literally oceans away, and grew from it. I'm not going to come out here and say that Siren learned nothing from this experience, because she definitely did. She learned to love her mermaid self, gills and all. And yes, she would inevitably reunite with Crystal and Adam and Tiffany eventually either way. But now they've just kind of made it too easy for her. She spends all this time dwelling on having to leave her loved ones on land, only for the film to be, like, we take it back, do whatever you want, because you can. It's a cop-out. End of. I'm sorry. It feels a bit like a Disney death, but not really, because nobody died. I'm really happy nobody died. Number two. I said this earlier, I feel like this movie thinks I'm stupid, honestly. Everything is so spelled out, everything is so obvious. It would have been cool to keep me guessing and keep me on the edge of my seat a few times, like with the Hunter stuff, but no, you had to make it painfully obvious from the get-go. This movie is telling me, hey, it's Andrea, just so you know, these are bad guys, we're gonna make sure you know this. And I'm just like, yeah, don't worry, I got that pretty quickly. Similarly, when Principal Strauss takes Crystal and Siren back to her office to give Siren an aerator, honestly, how I would have done that would have been to just have them follow Strauss to her office. Strauss gives her the aerator. You could assume she just has them because supposedly there are quite a few mermaids in town, including her own students and staff. And then that's it. Until the mermaid meeting, where suddenly she shows up and it's like, oh, hey, surprise! I understand that this movie is geared toward kids and teenagers, but honestly, if I were 12 watching this now, I'd still feel insulted. Number three. Here we go again. The Hunters. were the worst thing about this movie. I hated them for a number of reasons. First of all, they're creepy. Gary's creepy. Brody's creepy. But with the advantage of being really, really good looking, literally every time he was on camera, I was like, you know what? That is a good looking dude. It's a shame he's such a jerk. It's a shame he's such a creep. Because he's really quite handsome. The questions that they ask Siren when they first meet her are so unsettling. Like, they're not doing a good job of hiding the fact that they suspect Siren is a mermaid. If I were Siren, I would be way creeped out by these dudes asking how old she is, which was probably more innocent than I'm implying, but I have trust issues. The comment Gary makes before Siren and Adam go on their walk, where he says, "To Siren, after all, you have two legs, don't you?" Ugh, I hate it. Also, I mentioned this, I'm going to go back to it. The idea that there are researchers chasing mermaids, again, it is my least favorite mermaid trope. I think I hate it even more than the whole mermaid has to fall in love with a human male or else it's not a mermaid movie trope, because that's nearly all of them. I guess I just don't like the predatory nature of this, for one. It's also just not creative at all. Like I said, it happens in Splash, but the thing is, in Splash, it has that great comedic slant because while they have Madison, you also have Alan standing there in the tank naked, and they're studying him just based on association, but he's yelling, "I am not a fish!" And that's a major part of the first season of Siren as well. Another Siren, surprise. I think Donna was the one in the tank. This is where I come out and say, I still haven't finished Siren, even now that the third season has started. Get it together, Xandria. So, and then we can go back to the 13th year. Big John Wheatley falls under this category, but I don't know what his end goal was if he ended up catching Cody's mermama or even Cody. This one added the twist of, these mermaids can heal my son's condition. Sure, but after a while it took precedence over the fact that Siren is entering a new phase in her life, and that was already pretty significant. This film just doesn't know what it wants to be. Does it want to be a sort of slice of life drama with a fantasy twist? That'd be fine. I'd love that. But no, it has to add this hunter element, which takes it into borderline action thriller territory. So what is this movie? Tell me, is it a coming-of-age teen drama, or is it an action-packed sci-fi thriller? I will not take both for an answer, because it simply does not work as both. It needs to make up its mind. There are two elements that don't work well together. There are movies that try to put these concepts together and do a way better job of it. A lot of superhero movies tackle this better than this movie did, and I don't mind trying to screw around with the concept of genre, but make it make sense, at least. At no point did this movie make sense. At no point at all. And that was my gripe with it. My biggest gripe with it was just like, what is even going on? I like a movie that's weird. I love movies that are weird. But this one, it was just like weird without making any sense. It was all these things just kind of thrown at you. And I think what I wanted out of it was that coming of age perspective. So that's how I prefer it. As I mentioned in that episode about the 13th year, you can draw a lot from shifting into a mermaid or a merman in Cody's case and having a transition to the water, and then comparing that to going through bodily changes during your formative teenage years and then transitioning from like elementary school to middle school, even to high school. It's about big changes. And so I like it from that perspective, looking at it as like a coming of age film. What this film did was emphasize the emotional aspect of Siren having to come to terms not only with her changing body, but also the idea of having to leave her friends behind, particularly Crystal and Adam. And when you look at it from that point of view, it's that much more affecting, even if it's a bit unorthodox. Like I said, it's easy to feel a bit like a fish out of water in that respect, and totally normal. And that might even be the root of the metaphor now that I think about it, being a literal fish out of water. Now, when you throw the hunter aspect into it, again, it's just like, okay, that escalated quickly. So when you take that hunter element out of the equation and just have this focus on Siren going through this major life change, that's a movie that I would really love. But that's also the 13th year. Anyway, so that's all for Scales Mermaids Are Real. Oh, that was a doozy. I'm feeling a bit raspy because I've had to yell about this movie because this was some stuff. Now, before I leave you, I just want to clarify something that I'm sure some of you have an issue with. I know I don't have a set schedule for this show. I'm aware of it. It's something I'm working on. Usually I find right around the time I put an episode up or I start preparing one, something happens in my life that gets in the way. No, I haven't had any complaints about the schedule yet, or the lack thereof. But I do look at the Anchor numbers because of course I do. This is something I have to kind of work through and commit to. Remember, this is still kind of in its infancy at this point, and with every episode, I'm learning something new. This one was also fairly experimental, but I'm continuing to figure things out, and I really, really appreciate you all being patient with me as I do just that. Seriously, if you're listening to this show, subscribing, following, favoriting, I see it every time when somebody favorites it on Anchor, I see you. Telling your friends about it, thank you. You guys give me a sense of purpose and a feeling that I'm doing something that people enjoy and respond to in some way, and I can't be thankful enough for that. So I'm going to continue to improve the show in whatever ways I can to make it better for you. I'm considering opening a Discord at some point so we can all be in touch with each other and discuss these films in real time. So let me know what you think of that. In the meantime, post episodes, Andrea, take it away. Thanks for tuning in to the Mermaid Movie Club for this discussion of Scales, Mermaids Are Real. Please be sure to stay tuned to all my socials to find out what our next selection will be. I'm Mermaid Xandria, all one word, on Twitter and Instagram. Be sure to message me with all your thoughts, and you can even leave a voice message if you're using the Anchor app. Be sure to subscribe on the streaming app of your choice and tell all your mer friends about the show. And be sure to leave a rate and review on Apple Podcasts. In the meantime, this has been Mermaid Xandria. Have a mermaising day and a fantastic tomorrow. And keep washing your hands. Not even kidding. Keep doing that. I'm watching you. Not really.